Hi, everyone. Happy New Year. I know it's a bit late because we are already in the month of February. However, I was deliberate in not wanting to record a podcast episode throughout the month of December as well as January, simply because I felt like we all needed a break. You know, 2020 was such a disruptive year for our personal lives, for our working lives, for our business lives. And I think, we all needed a break to just shut down, pause and reflect and just decide what we want to achieve for 2021. And firstly, I also wanted to extend my sincere condolences to any one of you that has lost family, friends, loved ones throughout this time. I hope that you are finding time to grieve and mourn at your own time, in your own pace, and that you're not isolating yourself during this dark time, but are surrounded with family and good supportive structures to help you with this grief and loss. Secondly, I wanted to thank each and every one of you that has sent me emails, that have sent me messages on Instagram, on LinkedIn, thanking me for the podcast. I had no idea that this podcast would impact so many lives from individuals in different geographic regions outside South Africa as well. And it's quite heartwarming. And also to get feedback from you guys saying that you have learned so much about the agricultural industry and farming in general, so much so that you've gone to start your own food gardens, produce your own food at home, and also, you know, start your own farm, which has been a dream for many of you that have, wanted to start farming. And so it's great to hear these stories. Please share more of your positive stories as well. It was also great to receive some emails where people have mentioned that they've gone above and beyond and connected with some of the other entrepreneurs that I've had on the podcast, and you have decided to collaborate and do business with one another. And so I wish you all the best with your collaborations and partnerships. And I hope that 2021 will be a successful year for each and every one of you. And so coming back into today's show, I spoke to Riabetswe Malema, who is the CEO and founder of The Black Farmer. He has an interesting story, and I love what he's just done with his fresh produce market that he started on the 4th of November in 2020, and how he has grown in just 3 months in terms of sales and getting a number of farmers into his networks and assist farmers to find alternative markets for their fresh produce, and how he's also been able to expand his offering to poultry and livestock. And yeah, this is a very interesting story, and I'm glad that he's the first guest for 2021. I hope his story inspires you and energizes you to just really go the extra mile with whatever plans or goals that you've set forth for yourself for this year. And I really hope you enjoy our conversation, and I will add his details onto the podcast show notes should you want to reach out to him. Thank you. My name is Mbali Noko, and welcome to the Mbali Noko podcast. I'm a farmer, and I created this podcast to discuss all things agriculture. I will be interviewing and having in-depth conversations with industry experts such as farmers, scientists, agronomists, agri-tech specialists, to policymakers and investors. Basically, anyone you can think of in agriculture and across its value chain. So let's dive right into today's episode. Hi, Ria. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. Mbali, yourself?
I'm doing good, thanks. The Black Farmer. Why that name, or why that specific name, and what does the Black Farmer represent?
Look, the name, I think, says it all in itself. I don't want to say to rewrite history or to readdress. I think it's just to say that we as Black people can also farm, and can also farm on a scale that's able to be commercial and able to feed us as well as, you know, other people in our country and Africa as a whole, you know? So it's basically a name that was deliberate by me to say that, look, I'm young, I'm Black, and I'm farming, and we can do it, you know, because of, you know, amongst us, we've always seen it as something that's more us, the white side of, you know, the human race within our country. And obviously, you know, with everything that's happened in the past, they do have that advantage of experience and knowledge, which is good because I've learned so much from these guys. So it is always, and the aim has always been to have a name that will speak to other people, that will speak to black, that will speak to white, you know, speak to black and say, look, you are black and you can farm. To white to say, we are black and we are farmers as well. Look at us, teach us, and let's work together, which is what I'm doing now. So it's always been about having black farmers that are where I come from being one and being represented unapologetically so, you know. It's not merely about race or anything, but or color coding per se, but the intention is to bring awareness to black people that are farming. So that's why we have that name.
Okay. So let's talk about where you come from and how has the community from specifically where you come from viewed agriculture or farming as an activity?
Okay, look, originally, you know, I grew up in a semi-rural area, if I could say, you know, and, you know, growing up, you're 5 years old, before you go even to preschool, you'd wake up, you know, with your grandmother. We woke up every day and we had to go into the fields, do our 1 hour, and you get used to it, you know. But back then, it wasn't looked at as something that could be commercialized. It was merely to create food. But then I moved from that semi-rural area to the townships whereby there's literally no farming. So you can imagine there's no access to any land by the municipality, or there was no one doing greenhouses or anything. So there was literally no farming when I went towards the township side of things, you know, which is, you can say, semi-urban. So it's been very tough in the beginning to break those chains and to make people aware of farming. And I think you're quite aware as well that there are now so many young black people that are coming into the fray to try and farm, whether they are in townships, whether they're in semi-rural areas, whether they're in deep rural areas. So I grew up in a space where I was exposed to that. So it was something that I grew with from that side in terms of being in the rural areas and where I'm farming now largely. But also coming into the townships, there's little to none of any agricultural activity, you know. So it's been very good for me to see myself educating people on that and seeing other people come on board with that.
Mm. And when you started farming, what type of commodities did you first experience with?
Look, right away, I knew beforehand what I wanted to do because I actually started more off with poultry.
Yeah.
And then I just developed all the passion and the love for crops as well, you know, and mainly the crop that I dealt with the most was onions, you know, bulbs, onions and beetroot. Those are the main things that I started off with. And then, you know, as you go, as you learn and you do your crop rotation and everything, you learn the things that work for you, you know, until I got introduced to your ARCs, your agri programs and all those things, you know, because I come from an accounting science background. I don't come from an agri background in terms of profession. So yeah, that's what I started with. And I just went with the flow until I got to a point where I specialized with onion, pepper and thingy and cucumber, which is my main liners in terms of crops. And then otherwise, what I've done is that I've involved other farmers to come on board and supply me towards meeting the market, whereas I also give them the platform to have an offtake. So I supply and I manage those three main liners that I started with, you know, onion, beet and cucumber, as well as pepper. And then otherwise, everything else I will take from the farmers around me and around the country as a whole, you know, from Free State, Limpopo, Freiburg, Durban. That's basically, you know, what it got to from where I started with the main products that I started with to where we are now.
Yeah, because from my experience, when I looked at the brand, I thought it's a buy and sell, you know, and maybe assisting farmers with finding access to market, because, you know, a lot of farmers mentioned that is their biggest challenge. So with poultry and vegetables, you started farming vegetables. And how did you then move into poultry?
Look, I think it's something that for me was very natural in a sense that, like I said, you know, growing up, I experienced a lot of exposure to that business, you know, just like farming in the fields. We had a small poultry business. So for me, it was something that I realized that, you know what, where I come from, I'm farming in the rural areas. I travel there every day from the township. And in the township, there's a lot of, or there's a big need for chicken that's affordable. So it was just automatic, you know, every time I'd go drop off my crops, whether onions or whatever, whether at a pick and pay, or at a hawker or wherever my clients were, you know, I'd be asked, do you know anyone who has chickens? Do you know anyone who has eggs? You know, and you look at these things and then you start realizing that there's a market there, there's a gap there. Even if I don't have the chickens, but I know a farmer next to me that has. So can I fill in that market? And that's how it got to where it got in terms of the poultry.
Right. And so then how did you then move from poultry and vegetable production to now opening up a market where other farmers can supply through to your enterprise?
Okay, look, I think that was always for me the main aim, you know, because of every time, like all the farmers, you know, that I know, every time we take our stuff to the market, you know how it is, us here in Gauteng with the Tshwane and the Johannesburg market, basically in the country, actually being the biggest, there's big competition, especially from guys like your ZZ2s, your Solis, your Peter and Fenter guys, you know, the guys that have been doing it for long. I realized that, look, we take our stuff to the market, but most of the time, it's a 50-50 game, you know, in terms of infrastructure and all those things. We are not the best as young black farmers coming up because of, you know, unfortunately, that's just how it is. So I realized that instead of taking my stuff to the market where I have a chance of selling or not selling, because of there are other bigger guys with better quality, with better volume and more consistency and better long-term relationships at the markets, let me rather open up a space whereby I'm sure that our things will sell, and also we will sell to the community immediately in the townships, because the market that we've opened as a Black Farmer Garankuwa market is not only based on Garankuwa, the township alone. It's actually a plan that's going to roll out towards almost all the major townships, because when you look at the people that leave the townships to us town into the big markets, they are the biggest purchasers they are the ones that have the biggest spending power towards the market. 70% of the spending that happens in both the market, City Deep and Tshwane market, is people that come from the townships. So opening up the market was a reason, or was basically motivated by the fact that we would be creating convenience for our people, our hawkers, our food resellers, and other people that resell vegetables. They wouldn't have to go out into the market in towns and whatnot and spend a significant amount of money eating their margins, but rather locally we can service them and equally then move other farmers' products and my own products. So meaning that the community as a whole and black people as a whole are winning. So that's where it really came from. You know, it wasn't only based on the fact that let's give farmers a market, but it was also, what gap are we filling when we're bringing the vegetables home into the townships? Because most of the time, what happens is that I will pass the township from the rural area where I farm, pass the township into town, drop my stuff at the market. Then the person in the township leaves the township that I passed, goes into town as well to the same product. So we were like, you know what? Let's localize. Let's see how we can localize and create the convenience and sell the convenience as well as the quality of our produce. So that's where it came from, you know, opening up the market. It wasn't just basically us creating an offtake for us, but it was also servicing the market that is there.
Yeah. Ria, as you're talking, I'm like smiling because I'm so glad that someone finally did it, especially like within my age group, you know, because I know within my farmer circle, we talk about this all the time. Like, you know, there are farmer friends that I know that, for example, are based in Limpopo, and they spend so much on logistics just to bring their products to Johannesburg. To the fresh produce markets, maybe the City Deep or the Springs market or Tshwane, the Pretoria market, and only to have customers or suppliers also coming from Limpopo to Johannesburg to fetch the fresh produce and then take it back to Limpopo, you know. And everything that you're saying is obviously a reality, and I'm just glad that someone actually has finally done it. And also, you're also bringing awareness to the important role that informal traders or the hawkers play in the fresh produce industry. I don't know if you remember, however, last year in round about March or April, about a few weeks when we went into lockdown, remember there were only retailers that were meant to obviously operate during that time. And then with the fresh produce markets, they were open. However, you know, you had to be deemed as an essential service provider to be able to buy stock at the market. And I followed the market story quite closely. And during those times, early in lockdown, before the informal hawkers could get their own permissions to start trading, the market and many owners of these established fresh produce agencies mentioned that they're losing a lot of revenue simply because the informal traders or the hawkers aren't able to come and buy. And so that was a clear indication of the role and the big impact that informal traders have in the economy of the fresh produce industry. So I'm glad that you finally took the market in the townships, where that's where they reside and where they sell where they conduct their operations, the informal traders. Now, what I want to find out is, how was that journey of having to start and open up your market in Garankuwa? From just maybe walk me through that whole planning process, having to find a space to operate in. And is your market functioning the same way as we know as how the traditional markets function? Or do you have your own different system or setup?
Look, just to add on the comment that you said, at the end of the day, this is reality. You know, I have a lot of white friends and they played a very big role, you know, because of their history and experience in helping me set up, you know, as much as it's the black farmer, I'm not gonna shy away to mention that because it's important. Us collaborating is important. It allows us to have all the things that we need to have in terms of experience, you know, so
yeah.
It's important to reiterate what you said. Us as black people are the biggest number in this country. Us as black people are the biggest spenders in this country. So it was just so natural to have it in the townships because we are the biggest consumers. So the process of starting it, look, I'm not going to lie to you, it was scary, you know. But to be honest, we started. I just started and I said, on this day, I spoke to the guys, you know, the big guys who are doing potatoes. And I said, look, the biggest commodity in the township is potatoes because of your quotas, your chips and all these things, you know, that have potatoes involved in it. So what I need from you guys is to bring me stock. Let me start. I'll run in the same way, just to answer that question, as the Tshwane market does. Every morning, I set my price as competitive as possible to the Tshwane market and the Joburg market, but mainly the Tshwane because that's my direct competition. And it is competition because remember, these are guys, the Tshwane market, for example, I think they are around, what, 8.2 billion a year. Mm. You know, Joburg is higher, or if they're even higher probably, you know, but the last time I checked, that's what we're talking about. So imagine if us as black farmers could just have about 10% of that. In business sense, that's a lot of money, you know. It's a lot of money. And to start this, you know, I just decided that when you look at a lot of our townships, you look at Ekangala, you look at Soweto, you look at Hammanskraal, Garankuwa, places like Mafikeng, there's a lot of industrial places that are left abandoned. I don't know if you're aware of that. A lot of factories that used to have people, but now they have nothing. So the idea came when I saw the space and I'm like, why don't we create a market here? Because my facility is equally the same to Tshwane and CTD in terms of the way it's built, the way it is in every aspect. So I said to myself, you know what, let me go to these people at NWDC, Northwest Development Corporation. They are the managers of the property. And I spoke to them and I said, look, we can create jobs here. We can involve the community and create jobs, but we can also service the community with food. And I was fortunate enough to find someone that could listen to me, you know, a strong black woman that listened to me and said, you know what you're talking about is actually something good, because what we have here is factories that are abandoned, that are worth almost 700 million worth of property that's doing nothing. And she said to me, start your thing and let's see where we can go. And this was like a week before. The next week, I arranged with the guys that have potatoes and we signed our contracts. They dropped them and, you know, our first truck was finished. I think in about 3 hours, we were out of stock.
Wait. I want to know that in detail. Your first truck was finished within 3 hours. And how big was the load?
We had about 27 pallets of potatoes. Now, to finish that truck in 3 hours for a first-time place with basically little to no marketing besides social media, it was amazing. But it showed us that we were always correct because of people that consume and that go into the markets are us from the township going into town. Do you understand? So it proved what we always thought correct. So it was shocking, but also it was, you know, a feeling of gratitude in terms of, you know, we were right. And what believing in ourselves and believing, when I say ourselves, I'm speaking about the people that work for me, that work with me, you know, and we just said, let's start, let's see how it goes, you know, and it worked out. So starting, it was very scary, but I had a lot of confidence because I knew that at the end of the day, if I'm offering someone a bag of potatoes at 80 bucks, similar to the market, or I say, I can offer you those potatoes at 79 Rand, they'll still take it because they're still not paying 700 for a taxi or a bikey to transport those things. You know. And another thing is that in terms of operations, we work exactly like the market. But what we beat the market with is that the market opens at 5 in the morning. It closes at 10:30. We open from 5, we close at 5. Sundays we open, we close at 12. Saturdays we open normal hours, 5 to 5. You know, so it's one of those things whereby we beat the market in terms of that. The only thing they are obviously strong with is the consistency of supply of the same product, as well as the variety in terms of, you know, the different products that they have. So we're growing in that aspect, but we started really from nothing, honestly. Like, there was no funding, there was nothing. I didn't take out money to buy my first stock. You know, it was merely a matter of trust between farmers, me and the other farmers, you know. And they said, look, we'll give you. I'm talking about guys that are doing pick and pay, that have been doing farm wide for 40 years, that have been doing processing for so many years, you know, pick and pay, ShopRite, guys that I also met, just to mention, you know, I also met through the Agricultural Development Agency, AGDA, you know. Since I met with the directors last year, it really played a big role towards me having access to these guys. So it was something that really worked out for the greater good, and it allowed us to start, you know, no matter what. We just started and it worked out. So, like I said, you know, finishing that first truck in those minutes, I mean, I can't explain it to you because it made me so happy, you know. And every single person that came into the shop that day was like, we no longer have to wake up at 3 o'clock. I can wake up at 6, at 7, and I'll still get potatoes.
Wow. So take me back a bit. When did you start opening the doors of your Karankua market?
Okay. We started on the 4th of November. You know, 2020. We started on the 4th of... Yeah, 2020, on the 4th of November. That's where we started officially with the market. Ever since then, you know, I mean, it's been something else. So we started on the 4th of November and, you know, I don't know if I should say this, but we were well above 1 million a month in terms of what we were turning over. So it tells you a lot in the township doing that kind of volume. It's a lot of money that went into it in terms of the revenue, and it showed the potential that we have, you know. And in 3 months, I mean, we've done so much, and it's brought so much attention in terms of good attention in terms of, you know, institutions that are saying, hey, what do you need? How can we help? How can we get involved? You know, so to be honest, it's been good. Obviously, we've had our challenges. I mean, we started that thing with a facility that didn't have electricity, but because our stock was moving so much, we didn't need to store anything with cold rooms for a good 2 months. Yeah. Wow. So we just started and we believed, and, you know, most of the small farmers, the black guys that we call small, you know, which I don't really like, but the black guys and the black farmers that came through, you know, with their butternuts, their peppers, you know, they are happy because they realize the potential of what we have. So if we can replicate this as much as we can in every township, you know, look, I don't think we will have a problem of offtake anymore.
Yeah. And I just, that's what I wanted to also ask. So you started on the 4th of November, 2020, with your first consignment being potato. So my question is, what other crops have you also, you know, brought into the market and where you've done successful sales? Yeah.
Okay. Look, we've done a lot of potatoes, as you mentioned, and then we're doing a whole lot of onion and a whole lot of pepper. And then we introduce something like that the market doesn't have. Mm. We have a farm that's been milling maize meal, and we also brought that in. So basically, we push those line items as well as a lot of cabbage. We do a lot of cabbage. So those are the line items that really have a lot of push in the townships, you know, because also equally we're looking at what we are introducing and what we are servicing, you know, are we servicing the products that are needed? So basically, you know, potatoes, onions, pepper, cabbage, those are our main liners basically. Yeah. And then obviously processed maize meal that we sell as maize meal. So those are the things that we know that people in the township buy and consume frequently enough for us to always be taking offtakes from farmers, you know.
Yeah. And how are you marketing your market? You alluded to just social media.
No. We went, you know, that's why I'm saying we were so fortunate, because once we started turning over, we were able to take some of those proceeds and actually reinvest back into the business.
Yeah.
Towards the marketing, you know, we have our billboards up, we have people that go out with flyers and let the community know, you know. And otherwise, besides that, it honestly generally has been social media and word of mouth. Yeah. And I'll be honest enough to say that, you know, we also, you know, there was a time, you know, I'd be at the market, the big market, at 3 o'clock just to tell people, what are you buying? And they'd say potatoes. And I'm like, okay, I can give you potatoes.
Yeah.
At a better price. Where are you from? You know, and I'll be honest, it's business, you know. It might sound, you know, like ambush and whatnot, but it's business. It's clean business, because you're offering someone, you know, I think I met about 8 people that came from Harankua and that were buying in the market. I'm like, but I'm there. They're like, where are you? And every time they would come, they'd be like, wow, I didn't know this. I literally live 5 minutes away. And now they are one of the most loyal customers like that we have. So it's something that just makes you feel like it's worth farming and worth opening up something like this.
Absolutely. Let's talk about trade, Rhea. Like, you know, in the fresh produce markets, you'll have your typical sales agents. How does your market operate? Do they contact you directly, or do you have sales agents on the floor, but all the sales agents are selling the Black Farmer Market brand? Or have you also opened it up where small agents can also have their own trading floors?
Okay. At the moment, look, we as much as we are a market, but we basically operate like any other, any other wholesaler. Yeah. People that bring in their products, they bring in products that are branded in their name, just like the big markets. We are exactly the same thing, but the only thing is that we are the agent. The Black Farmer is the agent. So we haven't absorbed any other smaller agents within our market because of, you know, we're still growing to be able to be big enough to do that. But also, remember, the model starts to differ compared to the big markets when it comes to that side of it, the administration and business side of it, in terms of the market as we know it is a space for agents to come in and sell, in a sense that I, as the Black Farmer, can go to Tshwane and register and say, I want to have a space in the market as an agent.
Yes.
So basically, we are an agent that opened up its own shop and didn't rent from Tshwane.
Yes.
So we haven't opened up as yet, you know, to smaller agents to come in and sell, but it's something that we're looking towards, that we would welcome as well. Because remember, there are times like right now, it's been raining so much. So some of the farmers that are bringing in stuff to us couldn't harvest. So we'll not have the same stock as we would if it was a good week of sunny weather where we can harvest potatoes, for example. You can't really do much. You have to wait for the rain to settle. So we would welcome agents because on such days, they would be sourcing from other farmers that maybe we don't have access to as yet.
Yeah. I see. And then from a farmer's side, let's say I want to bring 10 pallets of peppers. Yes. How would I know the price and what would your payment terms be?
Okay. In terms of the farmers, like, I think that's the most crucial thing. We take care of our farmers a lot, as well as our clients, obviously. But what we do is you will call us and, you know, or however, contact us and let us know that, look, this is what we have. We want to bring it to the market. So what we do is that we operate on sending you a form that explains how we work, that, look, we do payment terms within 3 to 4 days. Because what we do is that if you say you have 10 pallets, we will say to you, okay, can you give us at least the next, the course of the day to, like, that's just how we work for now. Yeah. We take about 5 hours or so to make sure that when you bring in your peppers, they don't stand there and wait for clients. Mm-hmm. We already know when we say, okay, you can bring them, at least 90% of it, it's going. You know, and we're trying also to build relationships with our clients that we have, that in the next season or in your next harvest as in Bali, in your tunnels, I can say to you, look, Bali, make sure that I have maybe 12 pallets of pepper. And then we sign farm contracts with farmers. We have, I think, about 6 farmers now, black farmers that are farming for us in just the 3 months. And even I think about 3 white farmers that are willing to do potatoes with us on contract basis, because we guaranteed them, we showed them our revenue, showed them what we're doing, and that's how we work. But basically, our payment terms is 3 to 4 days. And before you bring your stuff, we allow you to bring it knowing that when it comes in, we are able to pay you the price that we agree on. Obviously, what we do is that because of we are competing with the market, then obviously, generally, as any business would, a market price is formed. What we do then, we say, okay, we look at the market, Tshwane market, and say, okay, Tshwane is selling at 40 Rand, for example. Last week, Friday, it was doing 40 Rand. This week, today, about 50 to 50, you know, on paper. So I'd give you an example. Yeah. Then we say, okay, if the market is selling at 50, you as the farmer, can we work on maybe a 10 or 15% discount that you can give us? You know, and then we'll say to you, we'll take everything that you have if you give us a deadline. Because remember, at the market, you can bring your papers today. Today, they might sell at premium. It's a Tuesday. It's a big trading day for the market. But tomorrow, once a day passes, the market works on a system of saying, no, you've lost the value. So they start bringing down your price significantly, like with 3 Rand, 4 Rand, and then it's almost 10 Rand a box. Whereas we try and move your produce at the same price as quick as possible so that you still get the money that we agreed on. Because the market also, remember, you are not guaranteed when you get into the market and deliver. They don't say, we'll give you 40 Rand. This, you'll see with the invoice and the money that comes in.
Yeah, the price is discovered on the market floor.
Exactly my point. So that's, we're trying to sort of, if I could say, do away with that. But also it's a very thin line of managing it, because remember, we're competing with the market. So we can't agree on a price without knowing where the stuff is going. Because once we do that and the market drops, then our clients will go to the market if we're selling at a higher price just so that we can pay you.
Yeah. So basically, you work directly with the farmer based on what the consignment that the farmer has, and you agree on contract with the price right there. So you're not taking away any fees like how you'd have at the traditional markets.
No. We don't have those fees, because already when we sort of discuss or agree with the price with you, we already factored in everything. So we don't have any extra handling fees or anything. One thing that we expect, just like the big markets do, is that you are able to deliver to us. If you are closer enough, you know, within our radius in Gauteng, we are willing to come and pick up depending on the quantity of what you have, you know.
So what's the need now? 3 months in, we're now in February. What's the need now in terms of crops over and above those that you've mentioned, which were potatoes, the cabbage, peppers? Is there a big demand for other crops now?
Look, I think for us specifically, I think it's just based on our market.
Yeah.
In and around where we are, we're having a lot of requests for butternut. We're having a lot of requests for lettuce at the moment. Those are the things that we have a lot of requests on. And obviously, any and everyone right now is just looking for garlic and ginger, you know. And we only had two farmers that were able to, you know, to supply us with that. So those are the things, you know, butternut and thing and lettuce, as well as, you know, the two hot commodities right now that everyone wants to produce and everyone wants to sell, you know. And unfortunately with those two, you know, like your garlic and ginger, you know the trend, how it goes. People, a lot of people now ran to them. But by the time they harvest, the value is down. So, you know, that's basically our lettuce and butternut. It's custom to us and in context to us right now. There's a lot of the requests that we're getting.
And I was just laughing earlier on when you mentioned garlic and ginger, because you reminded me that we still are in a global pandemic and we are still in lockdown. And how has, I mean, you're like one of the fortunate ones. So you must have had a great last quarter of 2020 because you started your market and, you know, in just a few months, you've hit your record sales, you've exceeded your expectations, surprisingly so, and you've been doing great. So how has, you know, the second wave of the lockdown that was announced by the president in December affected or impacted your business, if at all? And how have you managed maybe the footprint of clients or customers coming to your warehouse or your site?
Okay. Look, obviously, COVID protocols are COVID protocols. You know, from the time someone arrives, masks, sanitizing, and, you know, the social distancing, allowing a certain number of clients in our premises, you know, and controlling that in terms of, you know, what's required by us lawfully. So we've done that, but otherwise the impact in terms of, you know, sales, the impact in terms of farmers producing and farmers delivering, it's really been great in a sense that last year, you know, generally for food as a whole, not just us in Masota, it's been good in that there's been a lot of consumption because of people, besides the panic buying, people didn't have much to do but eat, but cook, but experiment, you know. So, and also it showed us that, you know, that the with food, you can never go wrong, but the importance of food security is much more higher now than ever. Because also remember with this pandemic, it's shown us that people consume a lot of vegetables, fresh foods because of health reasons, you know. And generally, before the pandemic, people are more health conscious, you know. That's why you see brands like your Herbalife and all these other brands that are health related are growing. That's why you're seeing the market of cold pressed juices growing. You know, I was looking at the stats for Woolies, how much they're doing on those small shots, you know, and it was shocking. And I was thinking to myself, imagine if Mbali had a brand that just does that, you know, as a black farmer that we're supplying and she's cold pressing. So generally, the impact has been good because of people are able to, or people are buying a lot of food right now, you know, because of they want to stay healthy, because of they also, like I said, did not have much to do. So all they could do basically was cook, sit home, eat. And obviously, you know, opening up in November towards December, a festive season, was something that was good to us. And I'll be honest enough to say that, you know, our sales in Jan compared to December were not the same. But they started picking up now because we have preparation for schools going on. School feeding schemes are starting to get to come into play again. So it's the more the country opens up, the better it will get, you know. So to be honest, the only impact we felt obviously is to have to control, you know, the physical aspect of making sure that our clients are safe, our staff is safe, and this protocol adhered to. But otherwise, it's really impacted us positively, and we haven't felt like it restricted us because of being the essential service that we are.
Yeah. You started this Black Farmers Market, just to obviously create market for a lot of clients, or sorry, market for yes. a lot of farmers, accessibility for a lot of customers who had to travel into the city to buy fresh produce. But now you've opened a local market within the townships. And you mentioned that when you yes. went to the development agency in Tshwane, or I think it was, you mentioned that you also wanted mm-hmm. to create employment. So since inception, like, how many jobs have you been able to create during this time?
Look, we've managed to have 4 permanent guys, and then every day we'll have, or every second day, about maybe an extra 6 guys that help with the packing, the unpacking, the loading, mm-hmm. and, you know, the cleaning afterwards every day. So, you know, I could say around between 8 and 10 people now yeah. Have income because of what you've created, you know. So it's that's where we are, and we're hoping to double that, you know, in the next few months, because of the more our floor space is filled, the more we can employ people, you know. And also, I mean, we're working under roof. We're working at 1,860 square meters, so we still have a lot to do in terms of that. Because what we're trying to do also is that we're going to have you know, bring in the poultry aspects. We just had our cold rooms. Newly constructed now, you know, in terms of chickens. We want to bring in frozen chicken because there's a big market for that in the townships. Mm. So we're speaking to a lot of farmers now that also have your abattoirs, but also a lot of black farmers that don't have the abattoirs but rely on local community abattoirs. We're trying to revive those abattoirs as well, you know. So our inception and our existence now starts having a ripple effect on other things, you know. So the job creation can only continue for as long as we grow the business and we remain going concerned and sustainable.
Absolutely. So what does a typical day in the life of Riabeta look like? Because when we started our conversation, you mentioned that you were farming, and then you did poultry, and then now there's the black farmer Garankuwa market. So are you focused more now on the market and sourcing and securing customers and farmers? Just what does a typical day in the life of Ria look like?
Look, I'm up 3:30 to 4 every day. You know, I'm at the market around 2:05 or so, because I don't live far from the market. Mm. Yeah, and then what I do is, you know, I have people working, so we've managed to create a system where we have reliable people that are working. You know, I'm hands-on every day. I make sure we have stock. I check what stock is in that came in overnight, because customers, as you know, they like delivering overnight, you know, not during the day, which is also good for our products because then they're not exposed to a lot of heat. Yes. So, from 4:45, I'm at the market more or less when I need to be there. And then I'm checking stock, I'm checking employees, I'm checking security, doing a security check overnight if there's anything missing, if we had any break-ins, if, you know, whatever's going on. Mm. And then from there on, I'm talking to farmers, you know, to just acknowledge stock that's received. And I'm looking at what do we need, you know, and I'm talking to clients as well, you know, to say, what do you guys need? Do you have enough stock? Is your stock finished? What can we do better? You know, and I liaise with my clients because I'm good at selling. I'm not going to lie to you, you know. So
yeah.
When we started, I did a bulk of the sales, like 100% of the sales that we made were just me. And there was one guy at the shop at the time, and I was just on the floor. If I'm not on the floor, I leave him, I go out, I go look for clients, you know. So now people come to us. So I'll wake up, you know, around 8:00, I'll go to the farm, check on the farm and see what's going on my farm. And then from there on, I'm out now going to visit clients once they've bought from us, seeing how they are trading. And then every day around 9:30, between 9:30 and 10:30, if not earlier, I'll go to the market, the big market, and see what their prices are, speak to the agents, see what clients are buying, why are they buying what they're buying, you know, see what can we do better that they are not doing better, you know. So it's still in that process, you know, and a lot of my time, yes, is spent on the market right now. And then obviously on the farms, sourcing product, doing what we need to be doing and growing our business as much as possible. So my day basically it starts with the market and it ends with the market.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So what's next for the Black Farmer? For 2020.
2021. If you check on our page, what we've done is that we've, right today, for example, I got a call from a friend saying, look, I see your post. He needs eight goats. And I think he said about 12 pigs. Mm. And he's in Mafikeng. So what we've done is that we have a digital platform whereby we sell livestock, but we have farmers behind us that have the livestock but don't know how to sell. A lot of Black farmers, as you know, especially our elderly people, they do a lot of livestock for sentiment and to say, I have so many cows and so many sheep and whatever. So we're trying to have them realize the importance of commercializing, also so that they leave something for the next generation, not just, something that they say, yeah, there's 500 cows, but what are they doing? How much are they taking out of your pocket? So we've taken those farmers and brought them in, whether they have pigs, whether they have sheep, whether they have goats, whether they have cows, we've taken them in and said, we will sell what you have. So basically, the platform that we're trying to grow more this year besides the market is that market of livestock, giving access to Black farmers with livestock so that they can sell their livestock. So like, for example, right now, we're doing a lot of chicken and cows towards a lot of funeral parlors. They'll order maybe beef from us and we'll say, okay, we'll give you maybe 6 carcasses this week. Then we go to the farmer will maybe give us a cow at maybe $7,000. We'll upsell it maybe at a certain price, $10,000, whatever. I'm just giving you an example. And then we'll have it processed because we have a few guys locally that have cold rooms and that can process that are also in the township. So we'll go out onto the farms, get the cows, do the slaughter process, and then send to the various funeral homes and, various people, whether they want to do ancestral ceremonies, they come to us for goats and sheep. Yeah. They come to us, for all the livestock they need. Because right now in the townships, it's not like in the rural areas, or it's not like, a long time ago where that there's an uncle who has a house and everyone in the township goes to him when there's something. There's no longer those things. So we're filling in that gap. And that's what we want to grow as well this year in a big way, to say we want to let people know that we also do livestock. The Black farmer is farming as a whole, and we're trying to own the entire value chain to a point where we will be able to buy into some of the farmers and buy into some of their livestock and own and breed, because the only way I think we can grow that I learned from white people is that they work together so much and they work together so well. So that's what needs to happen.
Wow, Ria, I'm so excited for this new journey of yours, and obviously expanding to other commodities. You've alluded to, there's so much, you've alluded to the demand that is available within the townships, which is true. Yes. And, as farmers, whether we're having crops or livestock, we forget that our own customers is our next door neighbors. Because next door, there might be a funeral, opposite, there might be a birthday celebration, down the road, there could be an ancestral ceremony. And these are all our customers. And it's sometimes mind-boggling when farmers say, I don't have market, and you're like, but, there's market everywhere. So I'm just glad with this initiative that you're doing and this new business idea in terms of having a market within the townships. And I hope you obviously expand to other townships because it's needed. A lot of farmers even don't, you're solving a lot of challenges for farmers as well, over and above informal markets, but challenges for farmers who don't have, logistics to take their crops a couple of kilometers away just to go into the city. But if you're within the township, you're obviously solving that challenge for them. And, you're creating a market that is in close proximity for a number of farmers to obviously sell their produce to. So, wow. I'm definitely inspired by a story. I need to come around and have a look at your market, and hopefully we can also do business.
No, definitely, man. Look, I'm looking forward to that, and thank you so much for the platform. You just let me know when you want to come, and let's see how we can work together, you know, to try and grow the culture of what we're trying to grow in terms of agriculture, and, you know, make the money and feed the nation.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Your feedback is always important. Therefore, please rate and review this podcast. You can follow me on social media at Mbali Nwoko on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, as well as YouTube. Should you wish to contact me directly, kindly send me an email at info@mbalinwoko.com. Look out for next week's episode. Until then, take care.